Hey, welcome back from the break. Hope you got your coffee and did your nature break and you're ready for another exciting session on DocumentDB. So this one, we're going to kind of take a look at some of the management operations in DocumentDB, and we'll spend a few minutes just going over some of the management operations and what's available. So management, we've done intro to DocumentDB. Despite the technical glitches we had with the demos, I think we made it through that one okay, and we'll get into to management. So in this one, we're going to take a look at scaling. You know, how do you scale an Azure DocumentDB solution? I said it was designed to be scalable, and it is scalable for sure. So let's take a look at how you scale these things. We're going to take a look at keys and why keys are important and how you manage your keys and what you do with them. We'll take a look at some monitoring alerts and some managing consistency and that sort of stuff in this module. So scaling, how big can I go, is a question a lot of people kind of say to me, right? They come to me and say, Ryan, so I want to go big. How big can you go? And my answer to that is usually, well, it depends on how much money you have available in your credit card, right? Or how much hardware we have available in our data center, whichever runs out first. Probably the money on your credit card, if your credit card's anything like mine. So how big can you go? You can go big. I mean, we've got hundreds of terabytes, you know, thousands of nodes. So you can start off from a 10 gig database and go up to hundreds of terabytes. You can go into petabytes if you really wanted to. So how big can you go? You can go big. All right, so if you take a look at scale, so there's two kind of concepts. The one is called scaling up, right? How do you kind of take a resource and make it bigger? Well, what you do is you add bigger and bigger resources each time. So you start off with a small PC or a small server, you add some more memory and some more CPUs and some more hard drives, and you know, you get a bigger PC, and then you get a bigger one and a bigger one. But at some point, you're gonna run out of kind of options when you scale up, right? There's only so big a server that you can get to. You know, I think we're into, I don't know how many cores and how many terabyte of RAM now, but at some point there is a limit to how big you can grow. So if scaling up was your only answer, then my previous answer of how big can you go, well, you can go as big as you want, that's not quite true if scale up was your only answer. Luckily, there's also this kind of concept called scale out, and this is really where cloud solutions are kind of designed to be. They really are designed to be scale out, where you take commodity hardware, so smaller hardware, not big, expensive kind of servers, but you take commodity-sized hardware, but you add lots and 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 lots of them, and you just keep adding these kind of commodity hardware as you go, right? So that's what scale out is about. And before I talk about scaling and DocumentDB, one thing I do want to talk about is I briefly mentioned in our resource model there's this notion of a collection. If you've worked with some other document databases, you may be inclined to think that a collection is a table, okay? In document database, in Azure DocumentDB, a collection is not a table of that form or of this form, okay? So where it's a bunch of columns, a bunch of rows, a collection does not equal a table. To us, a collection is a bag. It's a container for documents. Okay, whatever kinds of documents you want to put in there, like these mail bags, I can put in a small envelope, a big envelope, I can put a box, I can put anything I like into this container. So to understand scale and to understand DocumentDB and to understand some of the things we'll talk about later about like transactions and queries and all those kinds of things, this is a fundamental concept to understand in Azure DocumentDB. A collection does not equal a table. A collection equals a partition or a shard or a boundary of something. Okay. So with that in mind, okay, we now want to kind of dig in and have a look at how do you scale up an Azure document database, right? And I said a collection is very, very important when you look at scaling, because when you scale up an Azure document database, we give you three different sized collections that you can choose from. So an S1 gives you 250 request units per second, costs you about 3 cents an hour, okay? An S2 gives you 1,000 request units per second and costs you about 7 cents an hour. And an S3 gives you 2,500 request units per second, and it costs you about 13 cents an hour, okay? And that's how you scale up. So you add bigger or small, you choose bigger or smaller kind of collections, and that's our notion of scaling up within the tier that you're on. When you take a look at scaling out, collections are also important when you scale out, because that's the way you scale out your Azure document database. You would have seen that a collection gives you 10 gig of storage, right? Now, unless you're building really, really small systems, you're gonna run out of 10 gig of storage pretty quickly, okay? Or 2,500 request units per second is not gonna give you the next, you know, MSN.com where you get millions and millions of requests a minute. You're gonna need to scale out your throughput a little bit more than 2,500 requests per second. So how do you scale out your application? Well, what you do is with collections. You keep buying collections and they scale out linearly, right? So you start off with one collection, you add a second one, you add a third one, you add a fourth one until your credit card starts complaining and or until your application has enough, okay? Now, what you can do with these is that you can have different sized collections within one account. So here I've got the notion of an S1, an S2, and an S3 all provisioned within my one account, okay? And each collection gives you 10 gig of storage, but each collection also gives you a particular level of throughput, with S3, the red one, being the most, and S1, the green one, being the smallest. But it's nice because you can mix and match these things. And you can change the size on the fly. So when I talk a bit about partitioning and sharding later in the day, I'll show you one of the really cool things that you can do with collections this way, and how you can actually age out older data by just changing down the size of your collection as you go. All right, so that's how you scale up and scale out an Azure Document Database. The other very important thing that I tried to show you in the previous demo was this notion of keys. Well, how do you access your Azure Document Database? All right, you've got this endpoint, it's available. How do you actually plug it in? In a SQL Server environment, you may be used to using the SA password, because I know everyone uses SA password. Even though you shouldn't, and it's probably SA, and SA is the username and the password. In Azure Document Database, you don't use a notion of a user account like that. We're very, very similar to Azure Storage in that we use these things called keys, okay? And every Azure Document Database account comes with two 256-bit account keys, okay? And these account keys are your do-everything keys. These are like your SA password. If I have one of these keys, I can do anything to your database account, right? So please be careful with these things. Don't store them in a web.config file, okay? Don't put them into your source repository. Don't distribute them to third-party apps that run on your mobile phone or on a tablet or somewhere like that. Look after these keys, okay? You have two of these keys. So what you can do, and because you have two of these keys, you can rotate them, okay? And I highly recommend that you get into the habit of rotating these keys. You can fire up PowerShell, and using PowerShell commands, you can actually regenerate your key. I'll show you how to regenerate your key in the portal in a sec. But using PowerShell, you can actually regenerate those keys programmatically. That means I can take this PowerShell script, I can schedule it to run on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, whenever I want, and I can rotate my keys, okay? And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. So let's dive in, and let's kind of have a look at them. And let's hope that this behaves a little bit better than it did the last time around. All right, so here's my Azure account. I'm actually now back on the production environment. And if I take a look at my account to get to it, it's either pinned on your start board or you can go to browse, DocumentDB accounts, find your document database account, and you can see I have just one or two of them. You can go in and there's your account, okay? From your account, the most important thing you want to see is this key thing over here, okay? So you can see how I can get to my keys. And here is my endpoint, okay? That's the name of the account that you gave. So in this case, it was my name, .documents.azure.com. And that's the URL you use to address your service endpoint. And then you can see I've got a primary key and a secondary key. Okay. Now these are these do everything keys that I was talking about. With one of these keys, you can do anything. You can create databases, you can create collections, you can drop collections, you can delete databases, you can do whatever you want. Okay, so these are very important keys to look after and protect. And these buttons up here are the way that you can regenerate your key programmatically. Okay. So what you would do potentially is you would have an application and the application would be configured to use your primary key. And then what you would do tonight is you would then regenerate your secondary key. Okay. Tomorrow you would switch your application over to use the secondary key, and you would then regenerate your primary key. While your application is using the secondary, you would regenerate the primary, switch your application back over to use the primary, regenerate the secondary, switch your application to use the secondary, regenerate the primary. Okay, and you can automate that whole process so that it happens daily, hourly, whatever. Don't do it every 10 minutes or so, because it takes a few minutes to regenerate the key. But whatever kind of interval you want to do that on, you can actually access or do that. I'm not going to do this now because I have some demos coming up later where I've where I haven't actually kept to my own best practice, and I've stored this primary key in a config file. There are better ways to do this, and I'll show you how to do that as well in the demos. So if I wanted to regenerate the secondary, because I know I'm using my primary, I would just hit that. It tells you, are you sure? And then you get your account goes into this regenerating secondary kind of key. And if you come back here, you'll see your account's in an updating status. Okay. While your account's in this updating status, if I try to come back into here now, you'll see these buttons are now grayed out. Okay. So while I'm busy regenerating a key, I actually can't regenerate the key again. All right. So I have to wait a couple of minutes for my account to come back into an online state before I can regenerate the key. All right. And if you have a look in the list of database accounts there, you can see it's in an updating state as well. All right. And you'll actually get a notification once that finishes. A notification will pop up. But that's how you regenerate the account key using the portal. All right, so let's take a look at things like monitoring and metrics. Okay, so we know how to scale up an account, we know how to scale out an account, we know how to regenerate our keys. Let's have a look at some of the other kind of management operations that we can do. So by default, your home page actually shows the total requests for the day, the average request per second for the current day. Okay. Now you can go in and you can change these, and you can set these charts, and you can change the value of the charts, and you can change what it's tracking, what it's not tracking. You can do a bunch of stuff using the Azure portal, but this is by default what you get to actually see. And then you get to see another one called your operations view, and the operations view shows you the events that are happening. And again, you can kind of control those events, and if you drill into the events, you will see in a little bit more detail what's actually happening with that account, and you can set up some alerts and rules. So let's jump back to the portal again. And while my keys are still busy regenerating, let's take a look at here's this monitoring. So here you can see I'm viewing total requests. So I've had 828 total requests for this. So if I go into and edit the chart, I can see that's 828 requests in the last 24 hours. I can actually change that to say, I want to see this in the last hour, and I actually don't want to see the total requests. I'm only interested in let's say I'm interested in the successful requests, right? And save. So I can actually now change that. So in the last hour, I've had 20 successful HTTP requests. Okay, I can do the same thing here. I can edit this chart, and instead of kind of doing average requests per second here, I want to see the number of 400s. These are, my error requests. Okay, or I want to see my throttled requests. Okay, so have I bought a big enough collection? Right, in terms of the scaling up, or should I consider maybe going up to a bigger collection, or should I consider adding more collections? So let's go and add in the past week, okay, I want to see the total throttled requests. Okay, so you can change these kind of charts to whatever you want, and you can actually even go in and you can customize them, and you can change the size of the chart, and you can do a bunch of stuff like that. So if I wanted to make it a bigger chart, I can do that. Okay. So there's a whole lot of things that you can do in that Azure portal. If you ever get to the point where you've configured it so many times that you've gone, like I often do, you can actually come back to settings and you can restore your default settings, and then your charts are all back to kind of the default. I often break my charts and I have to reset them because that's that. So if I come back into browse, and I browse my document database accounts, go back down, you'll see that my account has now kind of come back to an online state. Okay, so that key has been regenerated. If I come back in here, you'll see that's a new secondary key, and I can now go and generate the key again. So it takes a couple of minutes, But that's all goodness. Then if I come down to my events, if I drill into my events, you can actually see that I've had 33 informational events and 3 error events. Okay, if I wanted to see what those error events are, I can kind of come in here, and you can see there are my error requests. I can actually even come in here and I can just filter them out. So I want to, I only want to see my errors and my criticals. So let's do that. Okay. Now we'll come back in here. The chart will refresh. And down here, I can actually see what those are. If I wanted to see the details of that, I just click on the operation and I kind of come in here, pick the event, and there I can actually see the full details of what was going on, all right? And this time it failed, and I can see what it was that failed. And this was an authorization thing that failed. Now the nice thing is, and when you speak to support, so sometimes that I can't resolve this and I actually need to log a support request to say, hey, please help me figure out what's going on here. There's some important information on this that they're gonna want to know from you. Okay, they're gonna wanna know things like your subscription ID, they're gonna wanna know things like the activity ID. If you were doing an activity, like a query that caused an internal error, there will be an activity ID here. Support's gonna wanna know what that activity ID is. So this is where you'd kind of come in and give them some of that stuff there. And here you can actually see what happened. I was trying to do something, entity with a specified ID does not exist in the system. So I was actually trying to query a replica at that point that didn't exist. So that's a little bit about how you can kind of work with that. Alerts, these are kind of cool. Say you wanted to kind of know anytime you got a throttled request. Oops. So let's say I wanted to do a throttled request alert, okay, and I wanted to kind of measure my throttled requests, and I wanted to say that it was greater than, I can handle 10 throttled requests in the last 15 minutes, okay. If I wanted to know one of those alerts, I now can create an alert, and if that condition is true at any point in time, I will get an alert. It'll either email me or it'll just alert me inside of the portal. And then I can actually take action on those. So those are kind of cool. So I'd recommend going and setting up some alerts. So things like throttled request units, maybe internal server errors, failed requests, authorization problems, those kinds of things. Go set up some of those alerts and you'll get emails and alerts when stuff has happened. So there you can see I've got one request now. You can actually see it's never been run. I can disable it, I can delete it, I can do whatever I want. So that's some of the management kind of operations that you can do inside of the portal. Let's spend a couple of minutes talking about consistency, because this is one of the other kind of operations that you can manage from within the portal. You can also do it programmatically at the account level. So one of the things that we wanted to do when we were building DocumentDB is around this consistency level. Okay, everyone's familiar with strong consistency. And that's because SQL Server and other relational database systems do strong consistency really, really well. Okay, and strong consistency is great, but it gives you the highest read and write latency, but it's the most consistent. So it's the most predictable results that you can rely on, but it's also the slowest, right? And it's the slowest because it's predictable. So, when I ask for a read, I have to wait until a majority of the replicas agree on what the right value is. So that they can give me a consistent view. So that when I ask the same question in 2 seconds' time, I get the same result that I asked that I got before, right? I don't get this kind of unpredictable result. So that's why it's the slowest by default, but it's the easiest one to work with, right? And everyone's familiar with strong consistency. Now, most of the time, if you jump across in NoSQL databases, you would then give up the strong consistency and you'd go to the opposite extreme, which is eventual consistency. And I'll talk a bit about eventual consistency later, but you kind of had nothing in between. You were either strong consistent or you're eventually consistent, and well, there's this great big chasm in the middle of nothingness. So you're either this or that. When we started out with DocumentDB, we said, nah, we don't like that, right? We want to close that chasm in the middle. So we spent a lot of time looking around at different consistency levels, and we built two more, in fact. So you could also have bounded staleness. So bounded staleness is kind of one step away from strong consistency, where you can set the level of freshness, right? So you're bound to get a strongly consistent answer that lags, that potentially lags behind the truth, right? But every time I ask the question, I'm going to get the same result. It may just be lagging behind the truth a little bit, and you can configure how far behind the truth it lags, right? And then you get session consistency, which is one that we've built in Document DB, and it's actually the default one because we believe it gives the best trade-off between performance and predictability of results. Okay, so this one you can think of it basically as it's strong consistency within a session. Okay, so within a session, every session gets a session token, and within that session, if I make a write, I can read it immediately, and I know I've got the response. Right? But Arvind, if you started a second session to the database, you would have a different session token. If you asked for, you know, the latest value of Ryan's age, because I change my age all the time, as we all do, I suppose. By the way, today I'm 21. I'm not really my age. So if you ask the question of, hey, how old is Ryan, and I've just changed that age, you may get a different answer, right? Because the writes haven't propagated across to replicas that your reads are being served from. But if I ask that question within my session, I'm going to get the answer that I just said it to, right? Eventually, your replicas that you're getting reads from will catch up. Okay.
The good thing about this is good enough for a lot of use cases. Absolutely. Where if you're designing something where, like a social network, where someone's publishing their updates, I mean, you want that to be strongly consistent. But when someone else is looking at your updates, it's perfectly fine for it.
It doesn't matter if, you know, it takes me 5 seconds to see the latest funny cat video that you posted on ShareBook or whatever the case may be. But when you've posted it, you wanted to make sure that cat video is there, right? Okay. Because there's nothing worse than posting a video, getting to the feed and going, hey, where'd my video go? It's not there. Damn it. F5. Oh, it's there. F5. Oh, it's not there. All right, so you want that kind of strong consistency. But if it takes a couple of seconds for your friends and your followers to get the video, yeah, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, right? So good point. And that's why we kind of set session consistency as the default. So if you do nothing, you get session consistency. And then you get the very far extreme that I was talking about, and that's eventual consistency, which is the weakest form of consistency, okay? Kind of all bets are off. You get whatever the replica thinks is the latest answer. All bets are off whether that's the right answer or not. But hey, to that replica, it is the right answer, okay? The nice thing about eventual consistency is that it is the lowest latency for reads and writes. So if performance is really of paramount importance to you, and we're talking, you know, splitting hairs at the millisecond kind of level, if performance is really, really, really important to you, and you want to get the lowest latency possible, then this is probably the one that you want to go with, right? But beware, all bets are off. You may ask a question and get told Ryan is 21, and then he's 39, and then he's 21, and then he's 39, and then he's 21. And at some point, all the replicas will kind of catch up, and you'll get a consistent answer, unless I change my age again, and in which case, you'll just live in this kind of weird, inconsistent world.
And all of this is in milliseconds.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking, and that's why I said splitting hairs into the sub-millisecond kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. But to some applications, it really does matter. You know, millisecond kind of. If I do a write, I want to be able to read it within a millisecond. I want to be able to read the right answer, right? Or read an answer, whether or not it's the right answer, that doesn't really matter. But yeah,
The determinism is also important, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so the SDK will guarantee that your data will never be more stale than this, or if you're using session, it will always be consistent within that session. So yep. That makes programming logic easier to write.
And that's one of the reasons that we went, well, we don't want strong consistency because that's a little bit too slow. You know, people are going to moan about the fact that it's a little slow. And we didn't want just eventual consistency because we've seen some of the crazy logic that application developers have to write in their application because you've got this strange behavior. So we wanted to kind of have things like session or bounded staleness, and Document DB will do the work to kind of, you know, make sure that that's always maintained. Now, the nice thing about this is that this is set at the account level that I'll show you, but, you know, at a query level, as you actually execute a query, you can weaken the consistency of that query. So my database account, let's say, may be running at strong consistency, right? But when I do a particular read or a particular query operation, I just want an answer back as quick as possible. I don't care that the answer might be a little bit out of date. I just want the answer back as quick as possible. Okay, so give me any replica, give me any answer, just give me the data as quickly as you got it. So I may want, even though my account's running at strong consistency, when I actually execute that query, I may override the option to say, execute this query with eventual consistency. Just go and get me an answer. I don't care that it might not be the most correct answer. And you know, that's a really good option to be able to do, to be able to weaken that consistency level at a per operation level, which is kind of cool. So how do I manage these consistency levels? So if I go in, so far I haven't actually shown you anything about consistency level, but if I go into the account and I go into the settings, here you'll see default consistency, okay? You can also get to it, I think there's a default consistency down there, but all settings is where I go. So you can see I'm currently running at session because that was, like I said, the default. I can change this account to be strong, I can change it to be eventual, or I can change it to be bounded. And bounded says, hey, I want to lag 100 operations behind and no more than, I don't know, let's say 30 seconds behind. Okay, and I can save that, and that'll then go and do an update, a management operation on my account. That'll change the default for this account to be bounded staleness, right? And now remember again, inside of my application, I can actually weaken that further to eventual. I can't strengthen it, because that would be kind of like mad, but I can then, at a query, go and weaken it to eventual if I wanted to. But for now, when I make a connection to this account, my client SDK will be told, hey, this account's running in bounded staleness, so ensure that you honor that bounded staleness kind of notion. And there's logic inside of the SDKs to make sure that we adhere to that sort of stuff. So that's pretty much it. And you know, there wasn't a lot to cover in the management, and that's kind of by design, right?
Yeah.
You know, we one of the things I said is we designed this upfront to be a service delivered on the cloud because we want you, the developers, to spend time focusing on your application, okay, not running VMs. You know, when I started out with this, one of my first managers, when I started at Microsoft, said, you know, do things only you can do and let somebody else do the rest, right? Now, as a developer, when you're building an app, the business logic and the value that you deliver building that app, that's something only you can do. Managing a VM, let someone else do that, right? Let someone else manage that VM for you. And in this case, it's the DocumentDB infrastructure will manage your stuff for you. So don't go manage VMs and set up VMs and create replicas and all that kind of stuff yourself. It's time, anytime you spend doing that, it's time taken away from building your application, all right? So this is platform as a service. There is not much management to do, okay? So just focus building your application. There are some knobs and there are some levers and there are some things you can tweak, but for the most part, just build your application. And that's it, that's the management module wrapped up, good to go. We're gonna take another 10-minute break and we will see you back then. Thank you.